Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
Now, for the last 5 years, right around this national holiday celebrating the country's independence, Vermont Humanities has sponsored readings of Frederick Douglass's 1852 speech, The Meaning of July 4th for the Negro. But this year, the organization has decided to step away from that tradition. Here to help us understand why is Christopher Kaufman Ilstrup, Executive Director of Vermont Humanities. Hello, Christopher. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Good to talk with you as well.
Let's talk a little bit about this Frederick Douglass speech, and then we can talk about why your organization has sponsored readings for the last 5 years and why you're pulling away from that and maybe rethinking how to address questions of race and racism and the 4th of July moving forward.
Sure. Yeah. Happy to talk about it. You know, the speech is a powerful, powerful document. As you said, it was written in 1852, and it was really, one of the earlier strong cases that was made for abolishing slavery in the United States that was widely heard and read by white folk in the United States.
And Frederick Douglass gave this speech on July 5th for the first time, correct?
Correct, yeah. And, you know, and part of what he was trying to talk about was this notion that that the 4th of July, which was even then really celebrated as Independence Day, didn't have the same resonance for every American. And that for many Black Americans who were enslaved at that time, the notion of Thomas Jefferson's words, all men are created equal, didn't resonate in exactly the same way for everyone.
You mentioned that this speech that Frederick Douglass gave was heard by many white Americans. What was the impact of it at the time?
I think, you know, if Frederick Douglass was becoming a powerful leader, was indeed already a powerful leader in the abolition movement in the United States. And one of the things that we've learned over these years, working especially with the scholar David Blight, was that one of the things Frederick Douglass was particularly good at was in writing and speaking to and for white audiences, and that he used a lot of rhetorical tricks in his speech, in his writings, that would have really resonated with white folks who were sympathetic to the cause of abolition.
All right. So that was the context in which he gave the speech for the first time. And moving forward, what made Vermont Humanities decide and not, you know, you weren't the only organization to do this, but to think about in the modern era, sponsoring readings where community members recite this speech around the 4th of July?
Sure. Yeah, the program really began with Massachusetts Humanities maybe about 10 years ago. And they graciously allowed us to bring it to Vermont in 2015, and we ran with it for 5 years. We did the program. We encouraged and supported community centers, libraries, schools around the state to do a reading of the speech each year, and indeed, I think many places around the country do readings of the speech. So we weren't alone in that. And it really, for many places in Vermont, it was rapidly becoming a tradition, an important part of their holiday.
Can I ask you to reflect on what you were just telling me earlier, too, though, about, you know, at the time of this original speech in 1852, Frederick Douglass gave the speech and you were saying, you know, this was something that he would address to white audiences. And in thinking about coming to it in 2015, through the next few years, that idea that this was a speech geared toward white folks, how did you think about that in the context of Vermont demographics and the value of a speech like this today?
Sure. Well, you know, of course, one of the things that it means is that most of the audiences for the speech, most of the people participating in the readings were white folks. In Vermont, and very often entirely white folk. And we started to hear a fair amount of feedback about whether the program was really an effective way for Vermonters to engage with each other around important issues involving racism, if it was actually mostly just white folk talking to each other. And so we started to really listen quite carefully to that feedback and try and think about the impact of the speech in a different way.
What way?
Well, you know, many Vermonters, especially Vermonters of color, noted, as has been noted many times over the years, that reading Frederick Douglass on the 4th of July, it appears to suggest that, as with Black History Month in February, that we only need to engage in this conversation once a year or during a relatively limited time frame, rather than considering that maybe we need to be engaging with issues of race and racism in Vermont and around the nation throughout the year. It really seemed to suggest that we could read Frederick Douglass on the 4th of July, acknowledge how terrible it was to be African American during the first decades of our country's existence, and then really just kind of go back to living our regular lives and feeling like we'd done our part by remembering through this reading. There were a number of other folks who suggested that perhaps we should consider uplifting and promoting the many Black writers and activists that are working today or in the more recent past, that we're not studying and learning from them with a singular apparent focus on Frederick Douglass was perhaps a disservice to contemporary Black thinkers like Angela Davis or John Lewis, Lorraine Hansberry, Bayard Rustin, Shirley Chisholm, Toni Morrison, so many others. Still other folks noted that Vermont Humanities, if they wanted to promote historical writings and historical figures from the 18th and 19th century, that perhaps we should consider doing more work around Black Vermonters like Lucy Terry Prince or Martin Freeman, and maybe the best known person from the 19th century, Alexander Twilight. So those were all of the things that came up for us as we were evaluating and thinking about whether reading Frederick Douglass was actually doing what we wanted it to do, which was to promote critical conversations about race and racism in Vermont.
And was that, were those conversations happening before this current sort of tension and refocusing and highlighting on these questions about race and racism in the U.S.?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good point that, you know, I've been at Vermont Humanities now for just about 2 years. And this was some of the first, these were some of the first conversations that I had when I arrived. And I think that, in fact, these conversations existed throughout the life of the program from when it started in 2015 until now. And so it's not something that a conversation that we're new to at all. And, you know, in the end, I began to think about this question the same way that I think about a lot of the traditional Memorial Day celebrations around Vermont. They often include a young person, usually a fifth or a sixth grader, reading the poem In Flanders Fields by John McCrae.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with it. In my youth in Addison County, I heard this poem every year, but I didn't understand the words and I didn't have any context for it. And the reality of World War I was completely outside of my understanding as a young person. It started to feel a little bit like we were in danger of reading Frederick Douglass becoming that same kind of tradition where the systemic legacy of slavery and racism, it's just too violent to let it become just another traditional holiday reading where we don't understand the words.
Okay, so what are you doing this year, and what are you doing to sort of further these conversations, bring them into a modern context, and really push people to have those critical conversations that you were hoping would happen through the reading of Frederick Douglass?
Sure. Yeah, you know, and again, just emphasize that Frederick Douglass is a powerful, powerful writer and was a very powerful speaker during his life. And it would do him a disservice to allow his words to become separated from the reality of their historical context and the contemporary relevance that they might have today. So we're not throwing out Frederick Douglass. We're always going to be studying Frederick Douglass.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll find that, you know, on the Reading Frederick Douglass pages, we're now talking about it as beyond Frederick Douglass. There's many more suggestions of other Black writers that you can read in your community, that you can learn from more contemporary folks, some of the folks that I mentioned earlier. You'll also find a page on our website that is a response to the death of George Floyd, That title, that page is titled "We Who Believe in Freedom Cannot Rest." That's a quote from the great Ella Baker. It has a lot of suggestions on actions that you can take right now to add your voice to the conversation and to make some change. You'll also see that we're continuing to use our platform to support current Black writers, artists, activists, academics, people in Vermont like Jarvis Green and Major Jackson and Rajni Eddins and Emily Bernard, people outside Vermont like jazz scholar and VPR friend Reuben Jackson and playwrights Keeley Gibson and Stacey Rose. We've been particularly thankful to be in relationship with Jarvis Green, who's helped us to bring some of those voices onto our platform.
Jarvis Green, who is executive director, I don't know his title, of JAG Productions.
Of JAG Productions down in White River Junction, which is a Black theater company in Vermont. I encourage everybody to get out and see what they're doing during the pandemic and, of course, to support their theater again when it can reopen. We're also inviting a lot of other scholars of color to work with us, like Laura Jimenez from Boston University. She's a Latinx scholar working on racism in young adult literature. We recently had James Chase Sanchez from Middlebury College talking about the legacy of white supremacy. And right at the beginning of the pandemic, we had poet Richard Blanco reading from his new book, How to Love a Country. So we're integrating a lot of this anti-racism work throughout everything that we're doing. So it's not just a once a year 4th of July moment. It's a constant effort to help lift up voices of people of color, and especially at this time, Black folks. It's not work we started yesterday. It's work we've been doing for a long time. But now we do hope that it is really very apparent to folks when they are visiting with us and participating in our work that this is something we're doing year round.
You know, Christopher, you mentioned the experience you had as a sixth grader and thinking about, you know, Flanders Field feels so removed from my experience and my idea of conflict and war. Could you speak to sixth graders today, not just about what they might want to be reading and maybe, you know, reading from other young people, but the ways that they might be able to contribute through their own creative work?
Sure. Yeah, you know, we're seeing that over and over again in this time right now, right? That youth are leading much of this moment. And there's a lot of work that very young people are doing. I also find it pretty heartening that a lot of adult activists, writers, and academics are producing versions of their work that are accessible to middle school students. 2 years ago, right as I was starting, we welcomed Ibram X. Kendi. He's a professor at American University and a great thinker on issues of race in the United States right now.
Now at BU, I think. He just moved to BU.
Oh, did he just move to BU? Great. So he wrote a book a couple of years ago that he was promoting called Stamped from the Beginning, A History of Racist Ideas in America. He came out with another book called How to Be an Anti-Racist. Both of those books are now available in editions for young readers to help them think about what they can do. But, you know, here in Vermont, I really look at some of the work that's happened in the school districts in Burlington, in Montpelier, and other places. Young people have organized efforts to raise the Black Lives Matter flag at their school, for example. I know my young person is a rising sixth grader at Main Street Middle School. And they have a Black Lives Matter flying at their school. They have activist groups that are actively doing work to help make the community in Montpelier a more welcoming and less racist place. And I think they're really looking at, you know, not just how to be nicer, but how to think about systemic racism and how do we eliminate that from our schools, from our healthcare system, from our correctional system, from our policing system. So young people are really leading this movement, and we have a lot to learn from them.
That's Christopher Kaufman Ilstrup, Executive Director of Vermont Humanities. Christopher, thank you very much for talking with us today.
You're very welcome, and please visit our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram and learn more about what we're doing.